Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to BWI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. Sean Fitz with us today. Nate Bauer taking the day off. It's the end of spring, so we're cycling people in and out on the show because they've been going hard, you know, all the way since September last year. Like, really, it never stops. But we're going to be talking about the transfer portal. Penn State has not had a mass exodus in this spring portal season so far. So we're going to talk about the in, the out, all the things that are going on with that. But of course, introducing our guest today, Sean Fitz, publisher, Blue White Illustrated. Fitz, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. You are fighting it today. We talked beforehand. Your voice is not great right now. And that's not a criticism of you. It's just a product, I think, of the season in central Pennsylvania. It's allergy season. It's cold season. It's all kinds of fun. Nate took the day off today. I'm sure it's crushing him that it's absolutely beautiful outside. I don't know what he would manage to find to do on a Tuesday that all of a sudden he's got a couple of hours free. It's good to be back. You're right. We're going to talk transfer portal. We're going to talk recruiting. We're going to just throw a mishmash of stuff at a wall and see what sticks. So I can't wait.
Yeah. And that's going to be kind of how we do things this month. And then through the summer is we're going to, because recruiting is going to be a focus during this summer period, we're really going to have elements of the recruiting show here with Fitz. You know, it's great that you do all of it, Fitz, because we can talk a little bit recruiting on Tuesday, and then on our Thursday show, we can talk more in depth on recruiting with Ryan Snyder and with you as we preview upcoming weekends and things like that. So that's where we're starting today, is with some recruiting conversation, just reviewing some of the news and information coming out of the weekend. So what do you got for us starting the week off on this lovely Tuesday?
Well, first, I would like to highlight Ryan Snyder's piece this morning of where Penn State needs to make up ground in the 2025 class. It's really not a surprise to hear these words in this sequence because Penn State's got a bunch of commitments right now. But you look at the overall picture and there's still positions that need filled, positions that, you know, Penn State's done pretty well at that need filled as well. I will throw a spoiler out there. Wide receivers on the list, if you can believe it. So Ryan talks a little bit about receiver, talks a little bit about some other positions that that Penn State is prioritizing. We're in that kind of lull right now between the spring game and the official visits, which will start at the end of May. So in the grand scheme of things, not that long, but it's going to feel like it when we talk about it week to week. We're in that little dip right now, and that's completely fine, completely normal. I'm sure in 3 weeks we'll have a show about, is it time to panic about Penn State recruiting? Another spoiler there.
We already did that one.
I know.
We did that one last week, I think.
It's a monthly series that we like to throw together here, and it's content season, so we've got a put all that stuff together. So I do recommend you check that out. I also recommend you check out his piece yesterday on spring visitors, because although the blue white game list was not overly, it didn't blow anybody away. The spring visitor list, very important for setting up the summer. So just check those out. I wanted to highlight Ryan. Ryan's going to be on the show without me on Thursday. So I'm sure he'll talk a little bit more about his stuff as we get going on this part of the recruiting calendar. There are still official visits being set up. Mostly they're one-offs at this point. There was a couple times during the last few weeks, or I guess last 2 months, where a batch would come out and all of a sudden five guys were setting up official visits. They're a little bit more few and far between. And again, if you understand the calendar, understand what we're going at here with how this works, is that first weekend, second weekend, very big weekends. Third weekend, we're looking at that commit weekend, which is also a huge weekend because they've started to filter that with guys that they think fit with different class or with the guys that are already committed and that could potentially end up in the class. And then that last weekend, I would write that in very light pencil, because we're going to see a lot of changes on that last weekend. But there are guys that are setting up official visits for that first weekend. The one that came out when we, I guess that was Friday, Grayson Littleton, the cornerback from he plays in Tampa. He's originally from Kansas. I think that's important because he's not a Florida native, so you probably don't have that same sort of pull. His father, stepfather actually played at Kansas State, so the Wildcats are right in there as well. But setting up an official visit is important. He put out a top 10 on Friday, Penn State in the mix. But really, and I'm not slighting Littleton, I'm not slighting anybody that does it, when you're putting out top 10 lists and you have five official visits set up, you're kind of telling on yourself there of what you
would do the math,
unless there's a situation where it's a local school you've been to a lot.
Yeah.
Certainly a little asterisk beside it there, but Grayson Littleton's going to be on campus May 31st that weekend.
Is he the type of player that could do official visits in the fall as well? So like the five official visits he's announced, and then maybe this extends in the fall, or is he the kind of player that isn't going to push it towards National Signing Day and make a decision before his senior season?
I don't quite think he's there. I mean, you look at his list and it's good. Absolutely. And I know Alabama's been after him, but at the same time, that list of guys that can afford to do that. And when I say afford to do that, I mean, still have the opportunities at those big schools and still have the opportunities of not being a back burner guy at those big schools. I think that list is much smaller than you would think. So I would guess that a large majority, and I don't do percentages, but a large majority of these guys that are coming in June are going to be decided before their senior season, because obviously spaces fill up a lot of different places, but at the same time, they want to get this over with before they start playing, because this should be the most fun, the most productive season of their high school career. So Grayson Littleton is a top is an on 300 kid, a four-star kid, a really fast kid as well, who has moved up Penn State's pecking order at corner. Obviously Jameer Joseph, Brendan Finney, still big names on there, but he's a guy that's certainly moved up his way. And again, we've talked about this before, Terry Smith is going to take all the corners he can get, because some of them are gonna some of them might even be beyond that, so we will see what happens with Grayson Littleton. But I would lean on the safe side of saying he's probably gonna be decided before his senior season.
What about some of the other guys that we've had conversations about? A name that hasn't surfaced in a while, Adam Shovlin. I see we have got a little bit of information on him. What do we need to know about what's going on there?
Yeah, he's going to come in for he's scheduled an official visit for that last weekend in June. So we will see how that sort of ebbs and flows with the rest of the defensive line board. He's a Pennsylvania native, Northeast Pennsylvania native, plays at St. Thomas More in Connecticut. He's been on the board. I wouldn't label him as top of the board guy, but he's been on the board and showed up for the blue white game. So as this goes on, and we've talked about this with a couple of other defensive linemen are hard to find, especially in this cycle, especially in this region. So it's going to be sort of a roller coaster to find that. We said that when Tommy Rupley visited and got an offer, which was a bit of a surprise. But if you take a look back and you think of how these cycles develop at certain positions, all of a sudden Tommy Rupley is going to find himself in a spot this spring evaluation period where Florida schools are going to come in, other schools are going to come in, and he's unrated by on three right now. And I'm not saying he's a four-star prospect, but there is so much value in being 6'4", 250 and being able to move. Like, you know that you're watching that. You're going to watch that this weekend with guys that are drafted from the lower levels. It's very important to find defensive linemen, and it's not always going to be the highest ranked guy.
So what's the last we need to know about recruiting? And then we're going to transfer over into the transfer portal and talk about what's going on there for the Nittany Lions.
So the coaches are on the road. We talked about this last week, and it's a little bit different of an approach because they changed the rules. It's not a situation where you're going to drop in every week. It's a situation where you're going to see clusters of coaches together hitting areas. Penn State was in Los Angeles. Tom Allen even went through Vegas, which is a very, very funny Simpsons reference of Ned Flanders in Las Vegas. But it's really just hitting certain spots, and that might be position, that might be offense, defense, that might be sort of different approaches than we're used to seeing during the spring. They were in St. Louis last week. Corey Sims, a St. Louis wide receiver who actually visited in January, I believe it was, has set up an official visit. So that receiver board continues to be absolutely massive. Wait to see the results on that one, but it's going to be absolutely massive. But yeah, the coaches are on the road right now. They can meet with 2025 prospects, so you might see some pictures floating around. I think one thing that I have picked up is Danny O'Brien is on the road, and that's a change. a change-ish. If you watched any spring B-roll of spring practice, you saw that Jaywon Sider is having a little bit of trouble getting around right now. So that makes sense. And Penn State's able to do that, to make some, to shuffle some cards and get Danny O'Brien out on the road to watch quarterbacks, mostly 2026 quarterbacks at this point, but watch other quarterbacks.
And then, of course, the perfect transition for roster building is the transfer portal. And so far, the Nittany Lions have two players that have gone on the transfer portal, Keandre Lambert-Smith. We've discussed in depth here on the show over the last 2 weeks or so. Malik Mega was the second player to go into the transfer portal. But Fitz, when we previewed things last week on Monday, the day before the portal opened, we had the conversation about here are places to expect the Nittany Lions, if they do lose players, to find, you know, kind of a guidepost for how that might happen. And so far, no movement whatsoever. And I think that's the most notable thing. How is Penn State, when other teams see their depth and their talented players that are not necessarily at the top of the depth chart, how are they preventing those players from going into the portal? And I don't mean like physically holding them back. It seems like there seems to be a reason players are sticking around Penn State. So what's the conversation, or how do you want to guide this conversation about what's going on at Penn State versus other top programs with really good depth and talent?
As is often the case, it is multi-pronged. Number one, it's really kind of funny that you look at at what Penn State's gone through from attrition this offseason, and it's lower levels than you before the portal. Like you had more attrition when this stuff was not publicized, which is just amazing when you think about it. Like I think they lost five guys in the last window. Jordan Vandenberg went out during the spring, and minimal movement this spring as well. So like that's less than we were used to seeing 10 years ago, which is really crazy. But anyway, there is the realistic opportunity there that you're probably going to go out and not find what you're looking for. And that sounds nihilistic. That sounds terrible. But at the same time, you look at what's out there. There's a lot of backups trading backups. There's a lot of guys that go into the portal that think they found a fit, and all of a sudden they're back in the portal. Like this is not grass is greener situation for everybody. It's there's a lot of different ways to look around this, and you've got relationships here. You've got a spot on the depth chart here. Might not be what you're looking for. Might not be the starting spot, but you understand what's there. So you better have that. You better have your stuff in order if you're going to look at the portal, if you're going to consider this to be a realistic thing. And the other thing here is Penn State has really, and I know they've had success and they're about to have probably a first round draft pick that they got out of the portal. But at the same time, most of their success moving forward is going to be through the guys that they recruit, through the guys that develop relationships, through the guys that want to play for the coaches that recruited them. So I think I hesitate to use the word special, but this is a sort of a painting of how this culture kind of works here. So am I surprised that the numbers have been so low? Absolutely. I am. Like, this is a situation where we've got a sheet where we've got pre-writes on guys that we think could possibly go because we've either heard chatter or it just kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But Penn State's been able to keep that around. And again, this isn't a situation where you had to jettison a dozen players to get to 85. Like forget that. It's not really an issue anymore because creative bookkeeping and NIL can all make that go away. So I think that's really what you're looking for. And Penn State continues to want to stack that roster. We're talking two worlds here, defense and offense. Defense is pretty good. And you saw what Penn State was able to do last year in getting their defensive players that are maybe a little bit lower on the depth chart. You think of a guy like King Mack. He's going to be the fourth safety this year. Yep. And I think there's a little bit of a gap there between 1 through 3 and 4. But in that fourth safety role, he's going to get plenty of reps. And that's going to be something where if he wants to switch it up and go somewhere, it's not a guarantee to happen. So I think that a lot of the way that Penn State does things, especially on the defensive side of the ball, it really gives a little bit more of it's a little bit more of a safety net there for those guys that are considering transferring.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So we'll get to your questions here in the chat. There's some questions about the transfer portal. We'll save those for the BWI mailbag coming up at the end of the show. So if you have any questions, drop them in the chat. I guess a follow-up to this conversation, Fitz, is initial flurry seems to be how these things work. Is there an opportunity or would you foresee anybody going into the portal in a delayed fashion? Maybe somebody who thinks about it, or, you know, James Franklin has to meet with all the players on the team and maybe guys are waiting to have that conversation. So is there a delayed response here where maybe that happens anyway? It just isn't a foregone conclusion where guys are putting their name in even before the transfer portal opens, like we saw with some of those top talent players that are trying to find an opportunity and money and all those things, you know, in the new era of transfer portal and NIL. So what's the timeline for when you'd expect anything, and what's kind of the end date of when you would expect guys that, you know, it is what it is with the current roster?
Yeah, the portal window is what it is. It's a couple of weeks, and honestly, I'm looking for the dates on here. So if you could look that up while I'm filibustering here. No, it's sure very possible for it still to happen for a couple different reasons. Number one, the semester is winding down, so like the guys still go to class, guys still have academic responsibilities, so that might be something that changes the outlook there. Also, like the supply and demand is out there. Like you've got guys with agents, and then you've got guys with agents. The agents are out sort of working those numbers, trying to see where the fit is. And so, sure, if there's promises made, promises not kept, like there's going to be a situation where you might find a guy that pops in. And this is probably more on the national level than at Penn State, but it's certainly a realistic opportunity at Penn State as well. Like I would not write that off at all. So you've got this window and everybody's got their own reasons. Most of those meetings, I think all of those meetings have already happened with Franklin. So like the initial rush that we kind of expected there kind of fizzled out. That's a good sign. But on the back end, like some guys might need a reason to go. Like they might be talking to some sort of person that, hey, now that this team's spring game is over, there's an opportunity here. And spring games are still happening, big weekend over the, or big Saturday over the weekend with spring games. So you might see some more movement in there, but it's really working itself out. It's working itself out pretty clearly. That Keandre Lambert-Smith, and again, I'm the guy beating the drum that this kid is really talented. That Keandre Lambert-Smith is as in demand as he is at this point, or seemingly as he is at this point, kind of says something about where the portal is. Like there's a lot of fixes that are that look good that might not be what we're looking for. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. It's like there's the same formula. It's player A leaves school. Fans say that's they'll be fine without him because of X, Y, Z. I think we can fill this in with Keandre. And then you're reading Auburn articles. I am just gargling today. It sounds like I'm the one that's struggling. Auburn articles, USC articles about, you know, this is the answer. Like,
yeah,
it might not be. Again, completely
top
talented.
Target doesn't mean, it just means within the sample of players we have now.
Yes. And if you look at what Penn State's looking for right now, they're looking for a receiver, but they're not looking for a receiver that's going to come in and catch 15 balls next year or be a developmental project. They're looking for number one. I don't know that there's a number one out there. We got a question in the chat about Antonio Gates. Antonio Gates, who was at Michigan State, he had 5 catches last year. That's not going to do anything to help your room. Like you're looking for a guy that can be a number one, and that is going to be very hard, if not impossible, to find.
Just to clean that up, the transfer portal window closes at the end of the month on Tuesday, April 30th. So
thank you
that is the end date to put your name in. Of course, there is that delay of, do you put, you know, the paperwork window is, I think, a little bit longer from what Fitz has explained. But like that is where you would expect. So we only have about 7 more days left in the transfer portal window. So if they're going to make those decisions, it's going to happen pretty soon. on that end, you know, you kind of transitioned into the Antonio Gates question about the receiver position, and you gave us the broad overview, but is it realistic for Penn State to bring in players in the transfer portal? Do they need to, in your opinion? How do you feel about the ingress of players? Has there been anything at all that you find valuable? I guess it would be the kind of harsh way to say, like, is there anything out there of value that Penn State would want to bring in that would help them for the 2024 season, or, you know, for a position they want to stock beyond this year, where we see Davian Collins come in, I think, last spring, and is now a part of the roster after a redshirt year, essentially. So do you see any of those minor or major additions happening for the team?
An interesting wrinkle that you bring up there in Collins, in Chop, in Johnny Dixon, in guys that have multiple years left. There's certain value in that, even if you're not bringing them in right away to play. And that's a hard sell. Like Penn State needs a linebacker right now. It's tough. They're not going to be able to get a guy that's going to be a starter because you look at what's at linebacker. Kobe King's coming back. Everybody knows, like, even though there's a vacated spot with Curtis Jacobs gone, everybody knows that Tony Rojas is going to take that spot. Don DeLuca has been around. So you have to find a guy in this sweet spot that you probably have a relationship with prior, but you have to find a guy that is maybe not quite good enough to start, but is probably good enough to start at a lot of schools. Or you got to find a developmental guy, which you've got. You took three linebackers in that class with Robinson, Keys, and Rojas. So you're kind of a different spot. So, like, there's such a delicate balancing act here where it's going to be tough. And it's not always going to be the guy that you most expect. And you look back at receiver, Keandre is in the is the top available one according to On3 right now. Sam Brown at Houston has been a guy that's been gaining some buzz. Elijah Badger, probably the guy that's been gaining the most Penn State buzz, even though I don't expect Penn State to sign Elijah Badger. But that's just kind of what's out there right now. It's nothing over the top. Like, does do these guys knock out 2, 3, 4, 5 on your depth chart right now? And is it worth making that decision for guys that you think can eventually develop, like an Anthony Ivey, Tyler Johnson, guys at that level, Caden Saunders, even, who had a good spring. So there's a lot of balancing there. It's so easy to look at this and say the portal can fix this and make this change, but it's really not. And we've seen that. And if you look at the piece I did back in January on the receivers that Penn State targeted in the last cycle prior to signing Malik McClain and Dante Cephas, it ain't a sure thing. Yeah. It's anything but a sure thing.
Yeah. And that's, I guess that's the, if we're going to make these pro comparisons, certain guys reach free agency for a reason. And certain guys transfer for a reason. Now, some of those reasons, you can obviously see the talent, and teams are going to be interested in those guys that have talent, and they think that they are going to be the fix. Coaches coach, right? So they're like, I can reach that guy. Well, some guys, it's more difficult than others.
Maybe I can change him, T. Frank. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
But you're right. It's a boom and bust proposition for a guy like Keandre, who is amazingly talented and can do it. Like, there are people in that room that think, or in that building, that think he's a second day pick. From a talent perspective.
Yeah.
But you bring everything with it, and we will see what happens. And it's going to be interesting. The thing that I like to throw around, and not necessarily Keandre or any of these individual targets, is there's a lot of fool's gold in the portal. I'm going to say that every cycle that opens a portal, there's a lot of guys that you think might be able to play that just aren't going to change the trajectory of your team. Unlike I could change the trajectory of my voice on this episode because I am struggling. Back to you, buddy.
You're carrying the show right now. I mean, you've been talking for basically 22 minutes straight, helping me out with the volume of words here on the show as we get through about the halfway point of today's show. So if you got any questions, throw them in the chat. We're talking to you throughout the show. The BWI mailbag is coming up. We are augmenting it a little bit because there were some NIL questions and Nate's not here, and I don't want to answer those. But we are going to be talking about some more of what Fitz wrote and talked about over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Great opportunity to remind you that if you're watching the video, you're enjoying this conversation. Please like the video, subscribe to Blue White Illustrated's YouTube channel. We do this in the off season. We have these conversations. We also break news with recruiting, with football, basketball, any of these conversations we're going to have on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. You can get that information from us. And the best way to know when it comes up is to subscribe to the channel. You can also subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. 2 months for a dollar. Use code PSU1 and you get 2 months for $1. We appreciate the support you give us here on the podcast and on the YouTube channel. By the way, to our podcast audience, I just want to say I'm sorry. We had a glitch in the system where I uploaded everything into the podcasting software, but our recruiting show for some reason timed out when it was publishing and they didn't alert me. So it's out now. The recruiting show from last week is out now. And hopefully you're listening to this one on Tuesday as well. And there's not another issue with that. But let's get into your conversation about the players that you feel had stock up, you know, that made a move this spring. You had offense and defense. And of course, if you want to check those articles out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, we're just going to get to the highlights. Who's the most interesting player from the offense that was on your list?
Well, another spoiler, there was a receiver on there, which I know surprised a lot of people, but hey, good there. I'm going to go with Venga Yonic. This is the worst possible day for me to try and pronounce his name. Man, I thought I was there, but I'm not. Venga has been very good this spring, playing guard and a little bit of center as well. There's been moving pieces. JB Nelson was moving around, which opened some things up. But this guy, I think, has put himself in a position to, if not be the starter, but like actually contend for a starting spot. I mean, I think we've all penciled JB Nelson into that left guard spot, but Venga has put himself in a position where he might maybe the leader right now. I don't know.
He's practicing, right? Yeah, so there's a big leader right there.
Yeah, he's available, yeah. Which is the best ability right there. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out. I like the way that things have come along on the interior. The tackle, different story. But I like the way that things have come along the interior from a depth perspective, because you've got JB and Venga both there at left guard, where Venga can play center, can play right guard as well. You've got Nick Dawkins, who seemed to hold up pretty well this spring, and Cooper Cousins at center. And then you've got Sal, who's played all the football, and then Cooper Cousins, who has appeared with the first team.
Yeah,
that's five guys, and that's a pretty good spot to be in, especially since you lost your starting center to the NFL. So, like, I think that Penn State's interior depth is going to give them the ability to run the ball a little bit more effectively this year. I think they're going to try to run the ball a little bit more effectively. And I think it's going to be fun to see out of Venga and JB, or whomever might be the odd man out, who's going to be that guy going in motion, lighting people up in that Andy Koltynicki little wrinkle that we've all seen on Twitter there. So I'm excited to see that. But I think probably most encouraged by the feedback we've gotten from Venga this offseason. He's a big mauler. He's a guy that's going to that had to take some time to figure out how to play within that 6'4 plus 350. I mean, he's massive, absolutely massive, getting those feet together. If they could come together, it would be a really good thing for him as a draft prospect. And I think that we're seeing that track right now. So I'm encouraged by his spring.
He, in the blue-white game, was a guy that stood out in terms of he looked and moved differently than he did last season. And I'm always curious of, like, I've said this before, like, guys that are in the strength program for longer, even if they're big dudes like Venga, who came to Penn State as, like, a notably large person, even if he doesn't get any bigger, they definitely get stronger as they're in the weight program. And it just takes some time for maybe some of those physical tools to really reach not even their ceiling, but to show, really. Because last year, I thought he was good when he played, but he didn't dominate anybody. He didn't move people off the ball like you'd expect for somebody who's as quick as he is at 350 pounds. This spring, again, going up against some freshmen and some younger defensive linemen, it is you have to keep that in context, but the way he moved looked different. And I never know if that's confidence and understanding of the position better, or if that is physical development. And probably fits, like, the answer is usually both in that situation. Right.
And from a program perspective, it's a good sign that a kid from Washington, 3,000 miles away, or whatever it is from here to where he went to high school, Washington is a program that just is coming off of a national championship game appearance. They've had a coaching change. They've had a roster overhaul because guys have left. And there's probably some boosters that want to negate that as much as possible. So for him to still be at Penn State, because that is like when you're drawing up the playbook, that's the guy you want to go out and find if you're a Washington booster that's looking to bring somebody home. So him being still here is a good thing.
Do you have a player on the defensive side that stood out to you?
Sure. Let's go with Tamir Robinson. And this is not like a situation where he's going to be a guy that is going to probably play a ton this year. But I mentioned him when we were talking about the portal a little bit ago. That's very important right now because you've got a couple of guys that you think can start. You've got Dom DeLuca, who you can probably play in that will role. I don't think they're going to play a ton of three linebacker sets, but it's going to depend on the matchup. It's going to depend on what's across the board from you. Right. But at the same time, like, where do you go after that? Keon Wiley missed a big chunk of spring. So like a lot of that focus falls to Tamir Robinson and Kevion Keyes. I thought Keyes would be the guy, like coming out of the feedback that we heard in the fall and the way that he sort of seemed to turn a corner, or I guess hit the wall and then push through the wall as a true freshman. And we've all heard that from James Franklin. I think that's important. But Tamir seemed to be the guy in the spring that was rising, and Tom Allen likes to play big middle linebackers. So there's a fit right there. We've always talked about, is he a middle linebacker? Is he defensive end? What is he going to be? I don't know. But I think the feedback is that he's kind of starting to be the guy that they recruited. And it takes so long to work back from that injury, to have confidence coming back from that injury, to learn a new position coming off of an injury. Like, there's so many things from that injury. It's not just about the knee. It's about everything else. But he seems to have worked through that, and he's still going to be the third Mike. So that's kind of the subtitles here. But at the same time, important production or progression from a guy like Tamir Robinson, because that is the soft spot that you're looking for in the portal, a guy to fill a role maybe just right above Robinson. But if Robinson can fill that role, that makes things a little bit easier. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. Maybe not this year, and I don't think Robinson or Keyes are where they need to be big contributors this year, but that's a position that has some grind on it. And we've already seen some grind on it. So I'm excited to see what Tamir can do, because he's always been a talented guy. He's always been a guy that's worked hard and gotten to where he's needed to get. And it's not easy coming out of City League football in Pittsburgh, but this is a guy that's still got some production left in him.
Yeah. I want to rewind back to his high school tape and what he did in high school to kind of just inform people about who this player is, because the transition to middle linebacker, where you have to be the captain of the front seven and you have to set the defense and understand the complexity. He played about five games maybe at linebacker at Brashear, because
and that's a rover. I mean, that is
that
is defensive end to safety, like pick your poison. Exactly. Where you're gonna line up.
He played safety, because the conversation was with his size, and he blitzed a lot off the edge. He lined up off the edge, but in the same game he was also playing like a free safety role. So this is a guy who in a blue white game, I thought he looked good running down the field with Andrew Rapelier, who looked good running down the field. So that athleticism and the ability to kind of be a, I don't want to say a three-level defender, because he's a Mike linebacker at 235 pounds, but he had the athleticism to do some things that you would like to have in your back pocket if you're a defensive coordinator from that Mike linebacker position, where if you can have a Mike that can cover, that's a defense that has very few holes. And you know, those are the flashes that I think I saw from him in the blue-white game.
Yeah, Robinson and Keyes, I think this is going to be a big year for them on special teams. Guys running down the field, because that stuff sort of sticks with you, and that's kind of how you get to where you need to be on the defensive side of the ball, is by getting into special teams. And I think having two guys that are that size and can run, you know, Robinson's not the fastest guy in the world, but having two guys that can get down the field is going to help you out.
For sure. Last thing, there was some conversation this spring about how do you replace Keandre Lambert-Smith? And, you know, digging through some of those things and kind of looking at the offense, and obviously we didn't see a whole lot of going on.
We're took not a talking stab about at, team here anymore, right?
No. Okay. I was going to do some shameless self-promotion here. Wrote about Caden Saunders over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com yesterday. Just trying to kind of work through the receiver question of what they have on the roster, presumably, is what they're going to have on the roster. So how do you make the offense work with those positions and players. And somebody who I think stood out this spring in Caden Saunders, not saying it's going to work, but a guy who I think has the abilities to play that position, kind of went into some of that stuff over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com this week. But we got a lot of great questions and comments in the portal. You guys have been killing it. So we're going to get to those right now in the BWI mailbag. Eggman is concerned about us. He says, y'all sound a tad consumptive this morning. Hope you get to feeling better soon. Appreciate you. We talked about this. Eggman was a little late to the show, I think, because we talked about this at the beginning of the show. I have no idea what's happening to me. But the good news is this is the best I've sounded in about a week. So I'm assuming that by football season, I will be in tip-top shape. Hopefully.
Yeah, and I just sound drunk because I can't pronounce words. So sorry. That's my consumptive right now. Yeah.
So this question in the BWI mailbag, best way, by the way, once again, to let you know, how do you get a question on the show? Go to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com the night before, as long as I have not forgotten. I put up the BWI mailbag thread. You ask your question and it gets featured with our fancy graphics. I love fancy graphics. So I love it when people ask questions in the chat on the message board. We're killing it today, Fitz. Had me at black shoes, says last year's group felt like they led by example and less vocal leaders than in 2022. Any insight on how the mix might look this year and who are the strongest player leaders on the team? We've had some of these conversations, but we haven't updated our perspective of who the leaders are on the team since spring football. So Fitz, what did you learn when kind of digging into this idea throughout the spring?
I'm still a bit on the fence in terms of what's out there in terms of leadership. We hear the things, we hear Nick Dawkins, we hear some of the, you know, Sal, like those guys on the offense. What we want to hear is the stars. Like I've talked about this. I think Nate wrote about this a month or two ago, more from Drew, more from Nick, more from those guys that are, you know, going to make the plays. Cause I think that makes a big difference. Like it's one thing to have leaders and this squad does have leaders, but I'm looking at this group and saying, okay, Bo is probably the better leader in terms of like the quarterbacks, and that's concerning. So I think that is a good question in terms of how we're going to figure this out. Now there's a defensive side of the ball. I think it's a little bit different. You got guys like Kobe King, who is vocal and lead by example. It's tough to explain because he's so mild mannered, like everywhere.
Yeah, he seems like a chill dude. Yeah, but yeah,
he'll get in your face. Jalen Reed is another one of those guys. And I think he kind of counterbalances what KJ Winston does. And I think that's a good thing. Defensive line, they've got some loud guys up front. So defense, not really worried about, but offense. Yeah. I think that's a legitimate question. Where are you going to find the leadership? Not just the, like I said, last year with Theo, Theo's a great leader. Theo's a tight end. Like there's levels to this stuff. So you want your quarterback, you want your guy that's going to have the ball in his hand. You want your receiver, and you know, Julian Fleming's going to be sort of the de facto leader of this receiver group right now. But you want your guys to be the top production guys and the top leadership guys. It doesn't always work out that way. That's more of an ideal situation. But at the same time, you want to see more of it at the top. And I think that's the sort of underbelly of all of this, is that you're going to have to see more from the guys that are sort of on the posters. The front of this program also need to be the leaders. I mean, say what you want about Sean Clifford. He was all over the place. Like he was a guy that was in your face. He was a guy that was leading by example. He was doing all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
those guys don't come around all the time. And I think that's something they're still kind of looking to replace in that room.
It's interesting how much the quarterback dominates this conversation without even mentioning it. And obviously we did mention it in this answer, but throughout the spring, you hear Nick Dawkins, like you mentioned, you hear these other players, you hear these other positions.
Tyler Warren. Yeah.
Tyler Warren. And then you're like, And if you, and you don't get it, and you're like, oh, okay. So you feel a little unsettled when the quarterback isn't one of the people that you're mentioning.
I think he's going the right way. And Rob just made a point that first year start is really hard. Absolutely agree with that 100%. But I think he's going in the right direction. It's just a matter of, like, I don't know if it's all that kind of natural to him. So we will see what happens with his progression there. And he's a good talker, and he's a good face of the program type guy. Yeah. Just when you get in there, you want a guy to grit through it. And, Sean was not the most talented guy, so he did make up for it with some of those characteristics and qualities. And I think that's what you got to work through.
And I think there's also the leadership by organization too, where he's talking about organizing spring workouts and kind of leading the charge and making sure everyone's together. But that, the standard is the standard conversation and making sure guys are following through that one. That's the uncomfortable part, right? Is the friendly conflict. Not everyone's built to ride that line and know how to do that in particular. And so, when your quarterback isn't that guy, I think that's kind of the conversation, not necessarily the things that we've mentioned that Aller is good at. Those are all great, but it's also that other part.
And it's not necessarily playing out like this, but when you see Bo, there's some part of you that says, there could be a schism there. And not something that's happening, but like when your backup quarterback is such a great leader, guys will gravitate to that edge.
This question from Psychim on the board, one thought, he gives a thoughtful response and then a question. He says, good week for Penn State offensive line, may have three players. I'm going to go with, they will have three players drafted in Olufashinu, Hunter Norzad, Caden Wallace. Reflects well on Phil Troutwine. Now, with that in mind, the next crop of young offensive linemen, even ones who might not be in the starting rotation, what have your thoughts on those younger players been, Fitz?
Yeah, I think they're going to need Ono to be in the mix in the back end of the rotation at tackle. Tackle is very thin right now.
Yeah.
And Drew Shelton's going to come back, so that's going to help some things. And, they're going to get healthier, and that's going to be fine. But tackle goes pretty fast. 2024, I don't think it's really in the mix for either of those guys because you've got pretty established depth on the interior. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. And then Ono, I just think, needs a little bit more time. I mean, this guy was 270 pounds a year ago. He's 320 pounds now.
Yeah.
There's nothing outside the ordinary about his track of development. And it's pretty much.
Did that shock you where he suddenly almost looks like a guard this spring? I was not prepared for that when I saw him the first time.
Dude is massive. He kind of had the Javen build in high school. So like to go past Javen where Javen's at now, and then do it like being the shoulders. He is thick kid, very thick kid. So I was surprised by that, but it's a matter of like learning to move, learning to punch, learning to do things. Like he already had a big learning curve in front of him because he was so raw coming in. But at the same time, you're gonna have to learn to move on those feet with 50 extra pounds. It's not easy. It is not easy.
Just a quick from what I saw in the blue-white game, obviously Garrett Sexton didn't play, so we don't have any updated information on that. We didn't see him during the spring. I thought Egan Boyer held his own while also being completely overmatched.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievably overmatched. Not only were those players opposite him incredibly effective football players on the white squad, but they also knew the snap count, and they were getting great jumps. And I thought he did a pretty good job considering I thought he was a right tackle in the conversation before, and then suddenly he's on the left and, was doing an okay job holding his own.
Yeah, I mean, he's exactly what we thought he would be. I mean, he's got to put weight on. Everybody knows that. But, for a kid that's 6'8", if he's 250, I mean, good for him.
Yeah.
He's still got another probably 70 pounds to go. Like, this is a kid that can play 6'8", 320. Like, he's a long, long way from the finished project. But he moves well. He seems to have a general sense of what he's supposed to do. And he's got that length. He's got those feet to work with. And again, it's going to be a struggle to put on that weight and continue to move like he moves. But he's shown enough flashes to instill some confidence there. So I'm excited to see that development, even if it's 2 or 3 years in the future.
Poncho570 has this question. He says, be it a recruit or a current player, you guys do an excellent job of telling us what a player needs to do development-wise to be a good Big Ten player at his respective position. Can you give some similarities with Big Ten players and SEC players and some differences? So essentially, what makes a guy an SEC player and a Big Ten player? What are the differences there? We don't cover the SEC, so that's going to be a little bit of a knowledge gap. But Fitz, do you have a general idea of maybe the differences here between the two conferences for Poncho 570?
They're a lot closer, I think, than they used to be. It's tough because people get so offended, especially up north, when you talk about the speed. They play at different speeds. That's not a situation where you just have faster guys in one conference as opposed to the other. But the way that you play your schemes, the way that you do things, you do it at a different speed. And that's fine because sometimes it works and sometimes, hey, defending national champions in the Big Ten, sometimes that works as well. It's just different styles. There's different styles in the Big 12. There was a different style in the Pac-12. It's very regional in terms of how you tailor your football team to the teams that you are going to play. That said, there are differences. AJ Harris is not a 4-3 guy. A lot of corners that play at Georgia are 4-3 guys. Yeah. But you come up here, you play a more physical brand of football, you play as a corner that has some safety qualities, all of a sudden you can become a first round pick. There are guys, a lot of guys in the NFL that play cornerback in the Big Ten. It's not the knock that we all see. So I think that it's differentiating style or different. I'm almost done here, buddy. there's different styles that fit for different schemes. There's different, different coaches that have success in one area and don't have success in the other. And I think that that's without getting too specific, because I don't know the specifics of what makes a difference between a Big Ten and a SEC player. You know it when you see it.
So I think the interesting thing is that at the top of each conference, there is no difference because the margin is so thin between elite teams where you can't really have weaknesses. You have to have answers with whatever your scheme is. You have to have answers within that for any type of offense that you'll face or any type of defense. So Ohio State wants to be more physical because they've got athletes on the perimeter and they want to create balance. Michigan wins a national championship because they had the speed and the quarterback to be a real threat in the passing game. Roman Wilson, I think, was highly underrated last year, so that brought balance to that offense where they were explosive in a lot of different situations. So in that regard, you know, there is no difference. But I think when you talk, you were right, talking about as a whole, there's a bottom to the SEC too. And it seems right. That speed is the differentiator. Most teams in the SEC will choose speed over size or over another characteristic. And there might be some massive deficiencies. And I think that's fair. You even see in the NFL, some of the receivers coming out of the SEC, I think in Tennessee specifically, big, fast guys. Do they run routes? We'll figure that out later. But that's one of those areas where, cursory knowledge. Because I've watched so much Kansas film, I can give you a better answer about the Big 12. Right. But that doesn't really matter here.
and if you look at what we're doing here on a Penn State show, Penn State is a top 3-4 program in the Big Ten. So you're looking at the top three or four programs in the SEC. You're right. There is Vandy. The comparisons between the players and the general team makeup and everything like that. You can draw a line from Maryland to South Carolina. Teams that have these individual guys that are dudes that just don't have the complete roster. And I think that that's sort of what's lost in this sometimes is you're looking at the Georgias, the LSUs, the Alabamas, the top schools in that league. And it's tough to sort of, cause you go one versus one, two versus two. And all of a sudden it gets a little bit murky as you get to 4 and 5. And I think that's what you're looking at Penn State fans as a Penn State fan, when you want to see the top, you want to see the best things, but there's some bad football in the SEC too. I mean, Florida is still a thing, right?
And somehow we always have a conversation about Florida in recruiting. I don't understand, Fitz. I don't understand unbelievable some of the perceptions.
You look at the rankings that they put together. It's crazy. Florida and Tennessee, you put them up against the records at Penn State. There's some things you just can't explain.
Amp LHU asks, are we going to see Aller under center running traditional play action concepts? I will never say never, but the majority, and I'm going to say 99% of the offense from Andy Kolnicki is out of the shotgun. So we've seen him run play action. We've seen him run traditional play action sets, even in the blue-white game. A big old play action fake out of the pistol, but they were in the shotgun or in the pistol. So, I don't necessarily think that that's going to... You're not seeing the traditional fullback, running back, play action. Like, that's not... I don't see that as part of this offense. Fitz, Andrew Berger wants to know, what would stop Luke Reynolds from being a wide receiver a la Joe Jerovicius?
I don't know. My problem with referencing guys that were playing in the 90s is it's not that game anymore. Like it's a lot harder to do that now. And Joe was a very talented guy. He was a little bit of a different athlete than Luke Reynolds, but you can play him as a split slot out or a flex tight end. But you can't play him there full time because he'll end up getting eaten up. I think it's a situation where he's going to continue to get bigger. He's going to play tight end. He's going to have success as a tight end, and you're going to have to go with that direction. It's been tried in the past, and they did it a little bit in the bowl game with Khalil Dinkins. I think there's a bigger difference there in terms of what you're looking for as a wide receiver coming off the ball with a guy in your face jamming you than coming off as a tight end. It's I don't want to say a completely different position, but it's, there's a lot of differences there. Luke is a really good athlete. I would struggle to call him an elite athlete. But that is a category for, you know, 4.4 guys and beyond, you know, like that is not a knock on him.
And that's also body type, right? So he's an elite athlete for a tight end, projecting that he stays his athleticism and is 250. So I keep saying this, and this is the problem, like transcendent tight ends in the NFL are rare, and you have, I think, more options in college, but generally, and this is just a general conversation, the fastest tight end is an average wide receiver. So, I mean, that's the answer.
Yeah.
And he's also not a receiver. So, like, he's not training all of the skills necessary and the understanding of the routes and all those nuances. Eventually, he could know all of those things and be a complete tight end, right? So, let's go to the extreme examples. Travis Kelce, he's an amazing route runner. Is he the best blocker in the world? No. But he's a Hall of Fame tight end because he can do both of those things. Luke Reynolds is not training like a starting wide receiver to understand all the nuances of route running because he's got to learn the tight end position. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's no immediate fix from Luke Reynolds for the receiving core this year because he's a freshman and he doesn't have all of that institutional understanding of the position to just go out there and be a baller. He's not that type of athlete to what Fitz is saying.
Right.
So hopefully that is a nuanced answer to a question that on its surface, I think we're having a hard time with.
Yeah. And the Jerovicius thing, like, I mean, Joe was a 4.6 guy when you could get away with that, I think, a little bit more. And yeah, heck of an athlete, heck of a football player, obviously. But it's just a little bit different. The game is now like you scheme for those guys, you scheme around those guys, and you scheme to take those guys out of the game. So would he have the same success in 2024? I would probably lean no, but he's in the Super Bowl champ, or at least a conference champ. He had a heck of a career in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. Seattle, right?
He was with the Buccaneers. I remember that because my roommate was a big Eagles fan and he made that ridiculous catch against them and almost put him in the hospital. So, yeah.
Bane Train asks about quarterback athleticism. Is there a philosophy for the quarterback weight room generally for college football? Love to see a faster, stronger Aller this year. I know this is something that we've talked about each offseason, something Aller's focused on. I guess, do you see that development in Aller, considering we didn't see him run the ball all that much?
I don't know what to tell you on this one. I mean, everybody's got a plan that's tailored to them. I think you want to see quicker more than faster with him in terms of like just moving a little bit better, being a little bit less stiff. But I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I think it's incremental progress. And also, I think Aller's personality is a bigger factor here than maybe the athleticism and that mentality of running than it is the physical ability. Let's get on to this one. Dakota Stroll asks, can Tysier Denmark make an impact as a freshman? I've had him mostly as a slot only in my mind. Fitz, do you feel that way? I think you might have a better sense of his skills than I do from the recruiting trail. And then just generally, do you think he can make an impact as a freshman?
Incredibly talented kid. That said, there's a lot working against him. He's going to show up late. He's going to have to learn the playbook. He's going to have to learn everything else. The academics have been a conversation with him the entire time. So he's got to do that. Similar to what we talked about with Jameel Lyons last year. Now Lyons pushed through it and had a really good freshman year. Denmark, like, is in a different scenario. Cause if you're asking him to push through it, you're not making him the sixth defensive end. You're trying to put him on the field to sort of change your offense. And I would not put your expectations there. Like, is he talented enough to do it? Maybe. But there's so much, just the everything else just sort of comes in with it. So I have a tough time seeing it. It would be a nice little cherry on top if they could get something from that freshman class to contribute right away. But it's I would not set your expectations to that right now. And that's not a knock on him. That's what's coming for him when he shows up in May or June or whenever he gets here. There's a lot.
Yeah, his ability to create separation, I have, watching some of the highlights he put out recently, it's really impressive. It's hard not to get, I understand why fans will get excited about that level of skill in an area where Penn State has been desperate to find guys who can just create room between them and a defensive back. So we'll see. But I think Fitz has a good lock on that. So
it's going to be really fascinating to watch because he is talented. He's not like, he's also not a 4.4 guy. And he's going to be the guy that people say, well, Jerry Rice ran a 4.7. Well, okay.
Jerry Rice was also not 5'10" or whatever.
Yeah. This is a situation where he's going to have to come in. He's going to have to, number one, hit the ground running academically, which is extremely hard coming from a background where he's been at a couple different schools and in the Philly area. It's going to be a very different situation there. He's going to have to get into workouts. He's going to have to get faster. And I know that's tough while getting bigger. Like there are so many things that are coming his way. And is he capable of handling it? I hope so. I absolutely hope that he is. But it's tough for me to look at everything that's coming his way and say, okay, well, this is going to be a guy that you pencil in as a guy that's catching the football on a consistent basis for an offense that's, you know, pretty advanced. And it's going to be tough for guys that have been playing college football a while to pick it up.
Yeah. So that's what we got here in the chat. Looks like we've got most of the questions answered for today. So excellent job. Super efficient by us. Got a 5-minute buffer here, Fitz. So what are you thinking about this week? What's coming up from you at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com?
Well, I'm going to go back and try some vocal exercises to see if I can actually start to to pronounce words correctly. A few mispronunciations today. I apologize for that. No, there's plenty of stuff. The draft's coming up. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
More recruiting stuff. I know Nate's out at the end of the week and I'm heading on the road and I will miss the show on Thursday. I think I already said that, but looking for a lot of stuff. It is content season, but I think we've done a pretty good job. Check out our stuff yesterday. Nate's had some notebook packages that sort of take you inside spring ball, had some stock reports as we talked about before, and Ryan's got some recruiting stuff. So there's plenty of stuff to keep you busy on BlueWhiteIllustrated.com.
Yeah, and I could keep breaking down blue-white film. I'm not finished, but I just wonder if people are interested over a week out from the blue-white game because, you know, there's individual players, you know, different aspects of what we saw. I've been mulling those ideas, but you're right. They're
going to miss it when it's gone. Just trust me on that.
Right? That's what I'm thinking. And also, like, the idea that you don't want to watch Penn State football, even if it isn't a scrimmage. I think it's a really interesting draft for Penn State. We've talked with Landon Tengwell here on the channel and some of his breakdowns of the football players that are going into the draft from the Nittany Lions offensive line specifically. And Caden Wallace, I thought he was going to be a secret starter in the draft. Like maybe he go fourth round. Expect him maybe in the second from everything I'm seeing and everything I'm hearing and some of Landon's breakdowns, his final year. I don't know if we want to call it senior year. His final year was so good and he fixed so many of those issues that I think teams are going to give him the option to play a tackle and he's got the body to play guard. So that's one. And then I think Hunter Norzad is being slept on quite a bit from the fact that if he had tested at the combine, he would have been a standout. And he's a guy that if you're 315 pounds and you run like he does and you can pull like he does. You know, I know Penn State fans probably feel a certain way after some of the issues they had on the offensive line with pass protection and stunts and things like that. This is a dude the NFL is going to want because he's height, weight, speed, and he's smart. So those guys, I think that's an interesting storyline for me. It's just those offensive linemen that are probably pretty underrated that might surprise you in the draft coming up this week. But those are some of the thoughts we have. What are your thoughts? Leave them in the reply to the video or join us, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. I'm Thomas Rancar. He's Sean Fitz. We will talk to you later.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy, interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood. Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California Volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit ca8neighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.